Good evening, everybody. Here we are, safe and sound. What a grateful thing. Roshi did a riff on silence in chapter 11. That's very interesting. He talks about deep and active thunderous silence. So in Japanese, the word for it means both silence and thunder. So it's that kind of silence he's talking about, not the just shutting up. It's the deep, deep listening. It's always silent. We just don't notice it because there's such a racket going on. In the middle of the afternoon, there was a jackhammer suddenly going right out my window. It was just rat-a-tat-tat. But he's talking in terms of silence about the flavor of human life. And he gives four different aspects of it. The first one being emptiness, which he says is nothing but the activity of everything all working together. So we think of emptiness as being a vacuum or a cup that doesn't have anything in it. But this is about the cup and what's in it and everything else. It's about, he says, the wholeness of all togetherness, that we're all connected. This is what Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeing, that itself, it has no beginning and no end. So in terms of time, it's timeless. It's like we're sitting here and yet everything is happening. And it's happening in our own time and space, even though we're not, don't necessarily have to be aware of it. And sometimes when I'm trying to go to sleep at night, I remember that there are waves crashing on the shore, that even though I'm gone from there, they're still coming in. Coming in. And this is true of everything that's happening. So although things look fairly well and safe and quiet, we too are burning. We too are drowning in the Mediterranean. We too are in all the various conditions that are a part of our life, however much we know or do not know about it. And because we live in 2017, we know a great deal about everything that's going on. He talks about the silence of the oneness of opinions, that although everybody has a different opinion, just like different things are happening, they all happen in the same place. And you really can't say positively one thing without bringing up the other side. If you want to be true, talk about what's real and true. So even though we like to hold on to our opinion as the very best one in every occasion, the other side always has a point. And it's very helpful just to try to discover that point and allow it so that we don't feel contentious about things. We can just say, oh, my point is this, and your point is that. And then we have a wholeness. The silence of selflessness he calls love and wisdom and prayer. Usually Zen people don't talk about prayer. Although I must say, chanting the Enmei Juku Kanan Gyo is a kind of prayer. It's calling on Avalokiteshvara to be with us all the time with compassion. And a whole lot of us chanted that not long ago and saved my life, right? So who knows? Many people begin Zazen with a prayer. It just sets the condition, the mind condition. And the silence he ends with, the silence of magnanimity. Just a great big mind that takes in everything and accepts it. Dogen often talks about magnanimity. That's one of, in Tenzo Kyokun, that's one of the minds that we develop. Cooking. That's the Balabhusta mind. The mom that loves to cook. Eat, eat, please, eat more. Which is selfless. We can't be truly generous unless we forget ourselves. And just give. Give because it's fun. It's much more fun than getting. He ends by talking about the deep, disconsolate flavor of human life. And how we, if we see this clearly, and really allow ourselves, dare ourselves to feel it, the poignance of human life, that we drop our dualistic ideas about things and are free of our pain, you could say. It's a very curious thing to be even talking about, but I think we're all feeling this disconsolate sense of human life and how very, very difficult and chancy it is. We never know what's going to happen next. He says, to finish it, all you have to do to realize this is to settle down on the ground of human life. Depend on sadness to be there and accept it. Sometimes that's hard to do. We want to be, and we're encouraged to be happy, but happiness is a very superficial thing unless we really cultivate the sadness that goes with it. When Dalai Lama says, "May all beings be happy," he's not talking about tra-la, let's dance among the daisies. No, not that kind of happiness. But the powerful kind of settledness and acceptance and sense of generosity that puts us in our place, just where we are. So that from here we can accept the situation, whatever it is, and then do something. We can't put out the fires, but there are lots of people doing lots of things about the fires. They're taking in the dogs and cats, and sending their whatever they have that they can share with people who don't have anything anymore. So settling down on the ground and accepting the sorrows of life gives us a chance to do something about it, to act. I went on a little bit into the next chapter, which is about time, space, and being, which is closer to Uji, which is why we started this book in the first place. This is a scattered kind of collection of his talks that someone put together, as I said before. And so they're not altogether composed around Uji, and they're not all together about Dogen, but this chapter is. It's a whole part three called Timeless Freedom. That sounds very cool, doesn't it? Timeless Freedom, wow. It just goes sailing off into the blue yonder. And this chapter is time, space, and being. And I can't say that he's completely explaining Dogen's ideas, but I think he is developing his own ideas around time and space. And so I will share them with you, and then we can talk about it a bit. He says, all sentient beings are dynamically interconnected and interpenetrated by the energy of timelessness, and being occupies the whole of space. All beings are dynamically interconnected and interpenetrated by the energy of timelessness, and being occupies the whole of space. When all sentient beings are interconnected in timelessness, the next moment can begin. Then being manifests itself anew as the phenomenal aspect of a fresh moment. So the source of time is being, and the source of being is time. But both depend on space. He says this is Dogen's picture of time. I have a hard time wrapping my mind around this. And next week I'm going to bring Dogen, because I think he explains it more clearly, even though he was very ancient. But he's really talking about now. The intersection, he calls it, of time and space. That because our mind is created the way it is and tends to fly off in many ideas, it tends to think its place and its being, although at the same time the body is just being where it is. So we create on top of the actuality of just our where we are right now, we make up whole complicated stories about what this is. Although we're just the pivot point of at every breath, at every half breath, at every little tiny rush of blood in our body, that still is always right now. Always. So that in that sense, our being itself is this time right now. We don't really know how this came to be. I saw Vanya yesterday and we were talking about how mysterious life is. How absolutely amazing. How much we know and how much we do not know. He says, life as no time includes everything. It's the pivot of nothingness before thinking. So once we start to think about where we are and who we are, we're out of here in a way. And as soon as we forget ourselves, we're right in the moment. We talk about that all the time, just be in the moment. But how often are we in the moment? And he says, he goes on to say, past, present, and future are all one thing. So as we function in the moment, it includes everything. It includes our world, our life, our time, and it includes what happened before and what's going to happen next. Then I found a quote in Science News that I've lost. Here it is. Changes in actual things, because this is all about change, really, and our attitude toward it. When things change, they reset the list of potential things. This is a very hopeful thing. This is they're starting to think about this in terms of how things work scientifically. That we think we figure out electricity and it's that set idea about it. But if you can imagine something else about it, that already creates a change and a possibility. I think people who are inventors and creators know this. It's what makes life terribly exciting. You get to be interested in resetting things, in the reset rather than the fixed place that everything seems to be in. because truly nothing is fixed. We just like to think so because it's more convenient. So are you totally confused now? that's how much I've brought tonight. Ron?
What's the Japanese word for thunder and
starts with an M. I'll look it up. Mokurai. Moku means silence.
Moku.
And R-A-I, Rai.
Mokurai.
Mokurai. Rai is thunder.
In this talk, and also in an earlier talk you did during the sesshin, you referred to us being now the pivot of a single breath, or us being the pivot between form and emptiness. So I also don't really know what a pivot means in just in English, but I also wonder if you can elaborate on that a little bit more.
Dogen talks about pivots a lot, the pivot. He talks about it in Genjo Koan also, as the human being, which exists as a knowing being, in the course of knowing and being, has both sides, has two sides of itself, and it's right there with both sides being represented, and we don't know it because we keep thinking about this and that and in and out and up and down. Everything is dualistic because that's how our mind works so easily about everything. But if we start to find ways to merge both sides, then we begin to realize that our thinking itself is a pivot that can go either way. And so we're not fixed anywhere. We're just always moving and working our way as we try to understand and live our life, with this and that both being true. And when we get fixed on one side, which we tend to do, we start to suffer. Because everything keeps changing, and that thing that we're fixed on doesn't stay the same, and the other side is just as true in some sense, and so we just get all mixed up. So I always think flexibility is kind of what they're pointing to, how to be flexible and allow this, what is never a frozen moment, this very, very dynamic moment, to just keep being all the different things that it is. That it's not just one thing ever. And it can always be something else according to how we think about it. It can be really nice or really terrible depending on how we think about it. So we ourselves are the pivot, the turning point.
What are we pivoting away from, and what are we pivoting towards?
Oh, there isn't any away from or toward.
Oh, okay.
It's all here. It's all here.
You mean like a bird flying? It sort of adjusts to the wind and would be pivoting?
He would be pivoting, yeah. Usually you think of pivoting, I think of pivoting as being on the ground and just turning in place like a top. Yeah. But yes, it could be like it's in action, constantly moving and changing. Andy?
It seems like that makes a long-term relationship with someone pretty darn difficult.
It does. It certainly does. And everybody knows it who has one. I always say if you're married, you have to get married over and over again. Really. If you're a friend, you have to renew the friendship constantly. You can't just rest in something. Otherwise, it's a dead thing. And usually there's so many challenges in any relationship that we're renewing it just to meet the challenge. Or not. I mean, sometimes we let it go also. Just depends.
So you've performed wedding ceremonies. Do you tell them this?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do. The nice thing about the weddings I do is that it consists almost entirely of the precepts, which the two people agree to practice together. So it's not like you're knitting people together in some kind of way in the eyes of the heavens or something. It's just that people are committing to each other in terms of how to take care of things, including each other. It's often people will print out the precepts because it's so different and make it available to everybody who's there. And people who've never heard of them just think it's marvelous. They really, really love it. Say, oh, that's the way you should have a wedding. So, yeah. And they don't always stay together. I'd say probably 75% of the weddings I've done are still together. That's not bad. It's 50% in the community, so 75, that's not bad.
You were talking about prayer a little bit, which is kind of nice. We were speaking about prayer a while back. And so it seems like there's just a really big range of beliefs about this, from it's all nonsense to like there's been this like popular kind of thinking around, like, I don't know if you've heard of it, there's this whole thing, it's called the secret, and they talk about if you visualize something as it's definitely gonna happen kind of thing. And it seems like prayer is a little bit in the middle. I was just wondering, What do you think about prayer?
Well, it depends on the prayer, the quality of it. I mean, when I was a little girl growing up, prayer was asking for things. You know, that's how we were taught. You prayed to God to give you stuff. And or to give you, you know, whatever you wanted. That was the whole point of it, was to get something. And as I've gotten older and sat with the Quakers and read a great deal of philosophy, I can see there are many, many different qualities for praying. And I think as we do prostrations before we chant the Heart Sutra, that we are totally surrendering ourselves to we don't know what, which is really what prayer is, as far as I can think about it. That we don't have to characterize something, because as soon as we characterize something, then it gets kind of opinionated and a bit grasping. But we just surrender. And in that surrender, something happens. We drop ourselves. We drop our grasping self and become more kind and generous and smarter, I would say, wiser, admitting that we don't know, that we can't know. But here we are. So it's kind of wonderful.
I haven't been to Japan or practiced, you know, don't really, how is it in Japan? Do they, in the Zen group, do they pray? I know the only Zen person here was Jiyo Kenna, who came out of a, you know, sort of a Protestant Church of England type of perspective and tried to kind of graft the liturgy onto Buddhism. They do a lot, they did a lot of one thing I always remember is the Kanzeon, which is
that one.
That, and that is very much like a prayer.
Right. Well, we're
praise to Kanzeon, asking Kanzeon
protection.
Protect or
yes.
Kanzeon is always there.
Yes.
Ready to help us, but then that's kind of praying to the
We have lots of those, lots of Dharanis,
yeah.
And a lot of them don't even make sense. You can't even translate them because you don't know what they mean. Or the Dai Shin Dharani, which we will chant in the Seigaki ceremony, as well as the Avalokiteshvara one.
Yeah.
It's just to call up all the juicy stuff in the universe, you could say. So it's a little bit hokey, and it's a little bit dramatic, but sometimes it's a good thing to do. Around Halloween time, we just start stirring things up a little bit. So I think that's what they mostly are. And they're protective too. One of the Daihi Shindarani is for people who passed away, I think, and for protecting the Sangha. And I really don't know enough about it. I just can't quite grasp it.
The Dharani, where does that come from? Is that
It's a chant.
Oh, that one of the chants we do?
It's a chant, one of the chants you do.
I guess that's kind of, you know, I think one thing in Western, recent Buddhist history, you know, Zen came here, I think sort of made up to be something kind of detached from that sort of activity to some extent, you know.
Oh, not so much.
Very abstract, or, you know, into non-attachment.
Kenneth Roshi detached herself from that, but San Francisco Zen Center certainly hasn't. If you go there, or to Tassajara, or any Zen center around America, mm-hmm. you will chant those things.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not saying they don't, but I'm saying that's kind of the image of Zen as contrasted, you know, to other schools, like in Taiwan, you know, I knew people were Buddhist, and it was just like Christianity. You go to the temple, and there's this Taoist gods and the Buddhist gods, and you throw these things, and
right.
the way they fall tells you what's going to happen, and you ask for stuff, you know, you ask them. What is that for?
That's not Zen.
Well, that's more like Pure Land.
Right.
That's kind of a rambling series of observations, but I never really felt Zen had that much emphasis on prayer in that sense. You know, it's sort of.
No, in my experience, it does. My experience with my teacher. You know, when my father-in-law, when my husband's father died, Kogan came. Mm-hmm. And he chanted, and I don't know what he chanted, but he sat next to my husband and chanted for a long time.
Wow.
And told him what to do, to set up a little altar for him, and etc. So there are things that we're inheriting, not all of which we do, but we can.
Mm-hmm.
It does exist in Zen, Japanese Zen.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a little after 8, so we should talk about this some more next week. Announcements?
Yeah, we have a few announcements. we have Sagaki on the 21st. Am I getting that
yes.
right? That Saturday. So we'll have service here. We need a Dongwan and a Kokyo to do all the chanting.
Do we need a Dongwan?
We'll have a service.
We have a service and then
do we do
procession?
A service?
Well, we won't. We won't. We'll just go from our sitting to back room.
Okay.
So we'll need a Kokyo.
Kokyo. Okay.
We have one.
Okay.
Judy's
altered. Oh. And then there we are. We've got one.
And we'll chant the Heart Sutra in English.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
And it's going to start at 9, contrary to the website.
Yeah.
It will start at 9 o'clock. 9 to 12, and then followed by tea and cake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can fix the website then.
Okay.
And I think we have everything covered for Sagaki.
Names.
Oh, that's right. Names of people who have died in 2017 that mm-hmm. we'll chant during that time. I guess you can send them to the secretary at floatingbendo.org email, and we'll collect them and give them to you.
Okay.
And then one other announcement. I think we need a substitute speaker for October 24th, which is Tuesday after Sagaki. So if anyone has suggestions, let me know. Or if you have suggestions. Anybody owes you a favor? Cause
it's pretty short notice to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
That's true.
But we could certainly do Way Seeking Mind talks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of those haven't been done yet. So this is how you get to know each other in a new way.